Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, you might want to pick up that phone and dial. The lines are filling up pretty quick. Here's the phone number, 347-884-8327. Tonight is all about your questions and your calls. We're actually going to record this as an extra hour on Sirius, so we'll be following that format tonight. If you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone. Might as well do it right away. We've got a bunch of calls lined up, and we'll just keep getting right through the calls tonight. So if you're listening and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, you're on the call, press 1. If you're listening online and you want to join us, better grab an open line, 347-884-8327. Again, tonight is a recorded hour for Sirius and XM. We're going to get right into the calls. So hold on 1 second. Good evening and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me and allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. The important stuff, well, that's your phone call, so let's get right to it tonight. Let's start off with Jack. Jack, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, me and a buddy of mine, we bought a truck January 1st, and we are by the book. I mean, we do everything by the book, and we are a team, and we are a hard-running team. And I was wanting to ask you, what would you suggest? On, you know, I belong to the Trucker's Edge, and I've looked at these loads out of California back to the East Coast, and just the cheap, I can't believe how cheap loads are out of the East Coast coming back. You know, what would you suggest for a hard-running team, the lanes to run? And we just got approved for a brand-new 2011 53-foot reefer that we're fixing to buy. We haul cattle right now, and we're just not making it right now. I mean, we're getting by. We're doing our trucks grossing anywhere from 6 to 7,000 a week. But how we do it is we take $1,000 a piece for our payroll, and we put the rest of it back. You know, we have a 387 piece, and our payments with our insurance and everything is $525 a week. And then we put the rest back in the wish fund, but we get up to about $5,000 if something always happens. I was just wondering what you suggest that we might do.
Okay, let's go through a couple things here. Did you say you were hauling cattle?
Yeah, we're hauling cattle right now, yes.
From now, that's one segment of the business that I don't know a whole lot about. But did you say you're running from the West Coast to the East Coast?
Well, right now we're running from California to Colorado and back to California, but we just got approved on a 53-foot reefer brand new that's fixed in the box.
Okay, got it. I was going to say, well, you know, I don't know a whole lot about the cattle business, but I just don't think there's a whole lot of it going from coast to coast.
No, there's not. And that's why we're a hard runner. And the thing is that we got to keep this truck running. And, we're setting two or three days on each end, and it's just killing us.
Yeah, no question. It's sometimes, and I know this is tough, and I've got a webinar coming up this month, and I kind of teach this topic that we're going to talk about more in depth. So I want you to mark that on the calendar and try to make it to that. And if you can't make the live webinar when we're on, it's recorded so that you can go into a website and watch it anytime. So it's a call. You'll hear the audio, but you'll also see, you know, some slides and some examples and things like that I have on the screen. So if you log in on the computer, there's actually the audio plus there's visuals. And that format kind of helps me teach some of the more complicated, you know, topics that we talk about.
Yeah,
and one
of
the things that it's really tough to get across without the numbers is that sometimes, and we get into that mode of thinking we have to have X per mile in order to make it. And maybe that number is, let's just call it $1.50 right now just for the conversation. So we look for that $1.50, and we don't see it today, so we wait. And tomorrow, we're looking again. And we keep missing a day here and there because we're always waiting for that rate that we think we have to have. Well, when we really sit down and calculate everything out, what we find is fixed costs are important, meaning we have to cover that fixed cost. We can't let equipment sit because we lose that opportunity. We lose that day. We only have so many days in a month, and we have to cover our fixed cost before we start creating any kind of a profit. And what we find, and I'll show this in calculators and in charts, is that if our rate, if our magic number today is $1.50, tomorrow it's very likely that it's $1.60 just to break even if we wait till tomorrow. So sometimes we just have to move today at $1.50 instead because the odds that we're going to get $1.60 tomorrow and then it goes to $1.70 the day after. And the thing is, if we get $1.60 tomorrow, we don't get any more profit. That's just our break-even number. We would have been better off to run at $1.50 today.
Yeah, well, we did 172,000 miles in 6 months. And our quarterly, when we did our quarterly, we was getting $1.51 a running mile is what we was getting.
Now let's stop right there. Because those are good numbers for me to hear. If you ran that kind of mileage, that means we would have done 340 for the year. Let's just take everything out. And if we would have done $1.50 per mile on 340, that means we would make $340 and half of that again, $510,000 for the year is what your gross would have been. I wouldn't change anything. I don't care if you're sitting 2 days on each. Seriously. If you're sitting 2 days on each end, that's fantastic.
Well, I guess we must be money hungry because we're just, you know, and it comes to the point, you know, we make $300,000, well, we want to make $500,000. We make $500,000, we want to do $600,000.
Yeah. Well, here's what I don't want you to do. You've got a trailer, you've got a gig, you're doing $500,000 a year gross, which means if we run this right, now, you know, before equipment payments, I can get. Now, we're not going to get you to this number, but, you know, the goal we shoot for is to be able to take home half of what we gross before equipment payments. Now, when you run this hard, it's really tough to do. Because I know our expenses are going to go up. We're not going to get the kind of fuel economy we want to get. We're, you know, maintenance is going to be higher. But even if we only do, you know, 40%, and we're at 200 a year, I mean, you guys should be able to take home 100,000 a year each. And I'll tell you what, you're not going to do that driving truck anywhere with one truck.
Well, right now we've got ourselves set on $1,000 a piece. And the way we do it, we do a $500 payroll, then we do a $500 distribution, which is what our accountant said to do. I mean, we've got an accountant, and we're on it, and they told us we're doing things by the book. We're not running illegal. I mean, we are just flat, hard core truckers. You know, we're doing 1,200 miles overnight if we can. But like I say, we're setting on each end. And I just, you know,
seriously, here's what I don't want you to do. I don't want you to go out and buy this 2011 reefer to end up pushing yourself to where the only way you can even come close to what you're making now is to run more miles. We don't want to get there. I mean, take the mileage you're running now, which is a bunch, but you're keeping it legal. And if you said, so what? You're never going to make this running reefer.
You're not going to.
Oh, no, I've seen the rates.
Okay.
You're not going to consider.
What I've seen coming out of California is $2.25. to $2.50, but right now it's about $1.80 if you're doing good. But the East Coast is $1.05 to $1.10.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, here's what I'd like you to do. I mean, if you can keep generating the kind of numbers you're generating right now, and it's that work is there and that amount of revenue is there, I want you to stick with that. And just keep studying the reefer market before you jump into it. And what I mean by studying is look at those rates, look at lanes, and try to find a combination that would work for you. I mean, I can't give you the magic combination because I watch it and I study it, but I'm not out there looking for stuff. So I want you to do that, but don't give up what you've got and don't go buy this reefer. You're going to create more expense, and you're not going to be able to generate the kind of numbers you're doing right now until you can put together a really sweet combination. I don't see it happening. These are killer numbers. Don't change anything right now. I've got to get to a break. We've got more stuff coming. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. We're going to go to Montgomery, Alabama this time. Robert, welcome to the program.
Aloha, Kevin. How's the blood pressure going tonight?
Doing wonderful. What's on your mind tonight?
Awesome. That last driver, they were doing just unbelievable, really, really good.
Yeah, boy, you got to love. And you know what? I love the fact that somebody's always looking to do better, no question. But what we have to be careful of is we don't jump out of something good and get into something where, you know, we're going to have to run harder, increase our expenses, and end up ultimately working more to make less. So sometimes we stick with what we've got till we develop a better plan. I think that's where they're at right now.
Absolutely. My question is about financing. I'm looking to buy an RGN trailer, and either used, preferably used, or like a repo trailer. And I heard you this week talking about financing, and I'm really interested in that because there's a lot of drivers out there that could use that kind of help.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that. When it comes to trailers, you know, I've often said with trucks, I'm very, very leery of repos in trucks because 9 times out of 10 what happens is by the time they track that truck down, you got to remember, you know, trucks are running all over the country and they're tough to repossess. Guys hold on to them, you know, for a long time after they stop making payments and they stop doing maintenance on them. And by the time they get repossessed and they haven't been serviced well for a long time, they've been run hard, not, you know, the money's not being put into them. Then they sit while they go through the process. Then they sit before they get auctioned. And you have to be very careful. If you're going to get a repoed tractor, first of all, you better know what you're doing mechanically to inspect it, and you need to have a budget set aside because it's going to cost money. Trailers, boy, you know, it's almost the opposite for me. Repoed trailers and auction trailers, they're great deals because there's just not that much to go wrong on a trailer. And the stuff that does go wrong, we know what our budget is going to be to fix it. So I do like the idea, especially on an RGN, something, you know, pretty expensive as far as trailers go. We need to stay used. I would look at repos and I would look at auctions for that kind of thing because we can come away spending a lot less money, still have a good trailer. As long as you know what kind of things you're looking for on that trailer that can go wrong and what kind of things we would need to fix or recondition before we put it on the road. Now, moving on to the financing. We're in a very different world when it comes to financing than what we are all used to. Financing is like business. It goes in cycles. Sometimes money is really easy to get. Sometimes it's a little harder to get. And the 20-some years I've been doing this, I've never seen a financing situation like we're in now. Money is really tight, and for most people, even with really good credit scores, it's tough to come by. Banks are holding on to their money. They're not making loans because so many loans were defaulted on. It's almost like when it comes to business right now, everybody is holding their breath, waiting to see what's going to happen. Businesses don't want to expand. Banks don't want to give out money. We're all just kind of waiting. So it never hurts to try the traditional routes. You know, try banks, try credit unions, try the equipment finance companies. If we find a trailer with a dealer, let them look for financing for us. Once we've exhausted those routes, then one of the other things that we can do, and this is pretty new, is called peer-to-peer lending. That's P-E-E-R, peer-to-peer. And if you do a Google search for that term, you'll come up with not only all of the sites that manage peer-to-peer lending and make this all happen, but you can also find some pretty good articles on what it's all about. In fact, most of the sites that you can go to do this also have good information about what it is and how it works. And I could easily do a whole show about this topic, but I'll kind of give you a quick rundown of what it is and why it makes sense in a lot of cases. Now, before I do that, the limit, most of these sites will limit the loans to a maximum of $25,000, which should get us there. We could either use all of that to buy the equipment we need and keep our budget below that, plus we can put in cash. We need to have some money in the game ourselves. Or we can use it in conjunction with other financing, so we can get a little creative on this if we need to. Basically, what peer-to-peer lending does is it eliminates the banks. It eliminates all the middlemen when it comes to borrowing and lending money, because really, let's think about what a bank does. A bank says, look, everybody bring your money and put it in the bank, and we'll give you whatever the going rate is as far as interest in a savings account. And right now, it's pitiful. I mean, a couple percent is all you're going to get when you put your money in a savings account. Then they take all that money, and they make loans to other people that need it and say, okay, we're going to charge you whatever the going rate is. And today's rates aren't that bad when we borrow, but they're not lending the money. So peer-to-peer lending gets rid of the bank and uses a pretty good technology to manage that and replace the bank with this. Basically, it's just the website that lets all this happen, and the website doesn't try to hold on to the money in the middle, and they don't have all the regulations that the bank has to follow. So when I'm dealing with peer-to-peer lending, I can be a lender or I can be a borrower, and the amounts don't really matter either. If I have $1,000 and I want to lend it to other people, I can do that. If I have $25,000 and I want to lend it to other people, I can do that. The other good thing about it is it spreads out the risk. Now, if you called me and you said, Kevin, I want to borrow $25,000 to buy this trailer, why don't you lend it to me? But if I lend you the whole $25,000, I'm taking a huge risk, because if you default, I'm toast. My $25,000 is gone, and all I can do is come after you and try to get the trailer back, and I can't do that. That's not going to happen. But instead, if I go to a peer-to-peer lending site and I have $25,000, I can go in as a lender, and I can bid on as many different loans as I want. I could literally loan out $1,000 to 25 people instead. Now, do you see how I've spread my risk out? The odds that all 25,000, or all 25 people, I mean, are going to default, go way down.
Yeah.
And I get to pick and choose. I want to lend $1,000 to this guy, and he has fantastic credit, so my risk is very, very low, and obviously the interest I get back may only be 5 or 6%, which is still way better than the bank. And then I might take another $1,000 and loan it to this guy whose credit is really on the weak side, and my risk goes up on that $1,000, but I may get 12% on that loan, or 13%, because I'm taking more of a risk. And I can go in as a lender and bid on those loans and manage that kind of stuff. Once we go in and we decide we want to borrow or we want to lend or we can even do both, the technology manages all this for us. We don't have any personal interaction with the people that we're borrowing or lending from. I go in and I put in my money, I make a loan, and when the payments get made back, that loan payment goes back into my account and I'm collecting my payments and my interest. As a borrower, same thing. I'm not dealing with the people who are giving me the money. Once they bid on it, and, you know, let's say it takes 10 people all bidding on my $25,000 request, and they all give me $2,500 each, and it doesn't have to be even amounts like that. I'm just using that as the example. Once that happens and my loan is met, then that $25,000 hits my bank account. I get the money, and now, and it's all set up electronically. Now my payment schedule is set. I think 3 years is usually the max. And I will have to start making those payments every month, and they'll come out of my account. And the people who loaned me the money will get their payments. It's all legal. There's contracts, but it's all pretty simple, and it works. And we don't have all that, you know, red tape in the middle with the banks deciding who's going to get money and who isn't. So the peer-to-peer lending is really an interesting concept. And I've, you know, when you first hear it, you think, ah, that doesn't sound good. This sounds kind of screwy. But I've done a lot of research into this. And the more I research it, the more interested I am in it. In fact, I'm thinking about going in and just taking out a loan so I can really see firsthand how the process works. But all the research that I've done so far makes it look pretty interesting. So check that out. And again, I may do an entire show one night and go through the whole process of signing up and how it all works and rates and things like that. But that'll give you an idea. That'll get you started. Go do a little research on your own. We'll be right back here on the Road Talk Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Lots of calls tonight, so let's just get right back to it. Let's go to Washington this time. Harold, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Fairtex Now. And, and what do you think about all these drivers talking about being classified as skilled labor?
You know why? I think this is such a joke, and I know this really gets people upset when I say this, but who cares? Who cares what the government considers us? I can't think of anything I could care less about whether the government considers me skilled labor or not. I mean,
That's my opinion exactly. As long as I get a paycheck, I don't care. Then I keep on asking these people that keep on saying, well, I ought to be classified as skilled labor. Okay, well, how many years of college did you have to go through to get your CDL?
Well, that's the other issue. The first issue here is who cares? Because I certainly don't. I could care less than get. I just want the government out of my business, period. So I don't care what they decide they're going to call me. But then the second issue is, let's get serious about it. And when it comes right down to it, driving a truck, we're not skilled labor. Come on, we teach people how to do this in a matter of days sometimes.
Yep.
And we throw them in a truck. And we, you know, any of us who have been around for a long time, I mean, I went to driving school and there are a lot of people older than I am who didn't even go to driving school. They got thrown in a truck with somebody. You know, I kind of knew how to drive already anyway. I went to a driving school just because I could. But it was 2 weeks for the entire school. You know, I spent the first 5 days just backing up in the yard all day long and taking a class here and there on how to fill out a logbook. I got to go out on the road a couple times, but there were four or five of us in a truck, so we might have gotten, you know, 20 minutes of driving in the morning and 20 minutes of driving in the afternoon. I mean, it was a joke. So to consider, and I was hired after that. Not only was I hired, I bought a truck and went to work as an owner-operator after 2 weeks of that. So to call that skilled, come on. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of skills required to be a really good driver and a good owner-operator. Yes, we develop skills over time, but it's not required. it's certainly not required to get a job in the industry and to go make money. We don't have to have almost zero skill, it seems like.
Yep, that's my opinion exactly. Like, when I got my license, mine was about the same way, 2 weeks in a class, and right there on the spot, take a test.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that there was no driving test.
Yep. Then I asked each other, okay, there was no college involved. You don't have to take no refresher courses. Well, now let's get down to the simple. How many of you guys even cracked open the FMCSA handbook or pocket guide? How many of you even opened up the CSA 2010 to read what's involved there?
Yeah, sometimes people should be careful what they wish for. That's always a good phrase to remember. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. How many of these guys would want to have to take continuing education courses or would want to be required to test on all the stuff that, if it's not required in our particular job, we just don't worry about it? How many of us understand bridge laws and axle weights and all the different state regulations and all the specific hazmat regulations? And how many of us would actually want to be required to know that stuff even if we don't use it in our job every day? Most of us, for the most part, all we do is we know what we need to do to get by. We don't understand. And I put myself in this category. I don't spend a lot of time knowing all the regulations that I'm not required to know that I don't need every day. But if we want to be considered skilled labor, then I think we should know that stuff. And we should have to take continuing education. I don't get the whole argument. I really don't. I think, for me, it's just a non-issue. Let's go to Missouri. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This whole skilled labor thing, frankly, I'd rather be known as a professional or a businessman first.
Well,
I thought I considered myself as a driver. I'm going down the road. I'm the professional driver. I should, like, know what to do and conduct myself that way, while all the four-wheelers out there, they're more like amateurs. At least that's how
absolutely.
I consider it, I guess.
Absolutely. And when it comes right down to it, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a small business owner, and I don't need anybody else to give me that title.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, the quick question I have is I got a Volvo 780 with a D16, your favorite motor.
Okay.
What kind of economy gains could I get if I changed over to the Pittsburgh Power Muffler and the Fleet Air Filter?
What year is it?
It's an 07 without the DPF.
Okay, good. That was where we were going with that. You will probably see a solid half mile per gallon with both of them.
Half mile per gallon per each combined?
No, with both of them combined.
Okay. Okay. That leads me to the next question. Is I got 7 months left in a four-year lease purchase. And I'm trying to decide whether to hang on to this truck afterwards. And I love the truck as far as being able to live in it, driving it and such. But when it comes to the problems with the EGR motors and the D16, it scares me a little bit.
I know. Let's talk about a couple things. Right now, what is the 30-day running average on fuel economy?
30 days on paper is 6.25. Lifetime on the ECM is 6.55.
Okay. And that's about what we would expect. These engines aren't known. I mean, we can get better. I mean, if we really work on this truck, it could be a 7-mile-per-gallon truck. And at 7, I'm okay. I can keep a truck as far as fuel economy goes. Does this truck have a history of EGR-related problems? Have we been through turbos and EGR valves, or has it been pretty dependable?
I'm scared of saying it because I'm sitting in it, but the EGR valves and EGR coolers I have not had problems with. It has had 3 turbos and actuators put on, but all those were covered under Volvo warranty, so there's been no out-of-pocket yet.
When was the last turbo or actuator that had to be replaced?
The last turbo was back in February. They said that the actuator went bad and they had to replace the whole thing. And then in, I want to say it was May, just the actuator went out. And so they just had to do the actuator.
Do you happen to know what the cost is when they have to replace the whole turbo?
I heard it was $4,500.
Yeah, I think so too. That's a tough call. The fact that the EGR valves have been okay, but turbos have been a problem. You know, it's fine when they're covered in on warranty up till now, but at some point that's going to come out of our pocket.
Yeah.
What is your buyout on this when the lease is up?
This is probably the other problem with the way the truck values are. It's going to be $53,000.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. That made the decision for me. I mean,
okay.
And that's really what, and here's what we have to do. I mean, we have to realistically look at this truck. And we have to look at a buyout like the minute we make our last payment and now the buyout is our only option. Just forget that truck's ours anymore. If it were sitting on a lot somewhere, would you pay $53,000 for that truck?
No.
But knowing
the history of it and the fact, that it's an extremely comfortable truck to live in. And
yeah,
back
but,
before I got...
But
go ahead.
Comfort is easy to come by.
Yeah.
Comfort is, that's not a problem at all because all we have to do is pick another truck model just like that. I mean, comfort we can see. Its size and its room and its space and its ride, and that doesn't really change. We need dependability. We need fuel economy. Those things are a little tougher. We can't see them. We don't know that they're going to be there. But the other thing we can see and we do know is value. And we know that this truck is not worth $53,000 on the open market. So there's no way we're going to pay that in a buyout. Absolutely not. First of all, congratulations for getting through the 4 years. But unfortunately, unless they're willing to make some other deal on this, I couldn't recommend buying it. I've got to get to a break. We've got more stuff coming. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog. Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Let's jump right back into the phone calls. We're off to Nebraska this time. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What can I help you with?
I think my question may play off a little bit of that last caller. I listen to you as often as I can, Kevin, but I've not heard you speak a great deal on Volvo trucks and more especially Volvo engines. I'd like to know if, any benefits or non-benefits to the Volvo truck and engine, and
okay.
any nuances that maybe you could tell me about.
Sure, and I can. I've actually got a lot of hands-on experience in this. We have to separate the two, the truck and the engine. I still own two Volvo trucks. All through the 90s, and into the early 2000s, that was my choice of truck. I like Volvos for a lot of reasons. They're quiet, they're comfortable, they ride nice, and they seem to hold up well. I've got a 99 that interior-wise and other things is still a very nice truck with a million and a half miles on it. They're easy to keep them in pretty good condition. My choice, though, was always a Volvo truck with a Detroit engine. That was my favorite combination. Unfortunately, after 2001, you could no longer get that combination. And the choice really became either a Volvo truck with a Volvo engine were a Volvo truck with a Cummins engine. And for me, I didn't really care a lot for either one of those engines. So I switched to Freightliner trucks because I can get the Detroit engine that I want. If I were to buy a Volvo, we'd have to look at the year that we were looking at. If I were looking at 02 through 07, probably, I would go with the ISX, knowing, though, that the 04 through the 07 ISX, I have some issues with EGR-related problems. After 07, I would look hard at I would consider Volvo engine, not a D16. That is the one that's just out of the question for me. The D12 with an I-shift, I might consider a combination like that. I like the truck. I don't like the engine, and I don't like the service. I think the Volvo service network is really lacking. Their parts availability is just horrible. I still deal with this because I still have two Volvo trucks that I need parts for, and it's always a problem. They never have anything in stock. I'm always spending, you know, overnight charges to get something in because I need it, and I pay outrageous prices for it. So that's kind of where, and as far as service goes, my trucks do not go to a Volvo dealer for service ever, period. Even when they were under warranty, I would make a decision. If the repair was under $1,000, warranty or not, I paid for it out of my pocket, took it to my own shop. If it was over $1,000, I'd usually bite the bullet and let warranty take care of it. But so I'm not a fan of the warranty. I'm not a fan of the service or the engine. But I like the truck. I mean, I like the ride. I like the quiet. I like the fit, finish, that kind of stuff. I like good aerodynamics. So to me, it's no longer, you know, I don't have the choice that I really like, which is that truck with the Detroit engine.
I appreciate that very much, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. So that's kind of where I am. If I had to buy it, I would have to look at the year and the other specs. Between the ISX and the Volvo engine, it's kind of a toss-up. It really depends on the year and what I'm going to do with them. I don't know. Tough one. But that should give you some ideas on what we're going with that. Let's see. Let's go to Yuma, Arizona. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Fair tax now.
Hey, is it your birthday today?
It is.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I've been telling people for months and months, if I make it to September the 16th, I'll be 57 years old.
Wow.
And that was when you're supposed to say, gosh, they don't look that old.
Gosh, you don't look that old. How'd I do?
But you did great. It was so convincing.
Okay, good.
It flowed so naturally. I know you haven't been hands-on with the income taxes in a while, but do you know if they ever changed the way waitresses get taxed on their tips? I mean, for a while, and I haven't heard that it's changed. They actually got taxed according to what they ought to make in tips.
Correct.
Is that the way it still is?
And as far as I know,
their employers actually take the tickets for each waitress and figure out what 15% or whatever would be, and then they deduct taxes from their pay, which is well below minimum wage, based on what they should have made in tips.
Correct. There is a rate that gets set, and the rate is, here's the ticket, here's what the bill was, here's the rate that we think you should have received in tips, and that's what you're going to get taxed on.
And there's people that actually want to keep this system.
The people who want to, when you say the system, our entire income tax system or just that rule?
The whole entire unfair tax system.
Oh, yeah.
Progressive taxing someone's income and requiring them to report every dime they receive from every source and justifying any expenses that they claim against that income and just basically being a slave to the federal government. When you think of a waitress, how many waitresses do you know that are driving Cadillacs and living in mansions and such? These poor girls are usually working two and three jobs just to support one or two kids, you know, and probably don't even have a husband around to help out. And here's the government constantly knocking on their door saying, you didn't pay us enough in income tax.
Oh, I agree. And I don't have a problem with, you know, there are some waitresses that do really well that probably that get a bunch of money that isn't taxed. So I don't care. What I want to do is just get rid of the system where this is no longer an issue.
Absolutely.
Because there's no good way to do this when it comes to tips. The reporting requirements are too cumbersome. There's too many different systems out there. You have some restaurants where tips are pooled and then shared. Well, you know, how do we keep track of this stuff? I mean, how do we, there's no good way to do this absolutely right. And you're correct. Some people, some waitresses are going to get stiffed on this because they're in a place where that percentage isn't the norm. You know, they do a lot of high volume, small tickets and people don't leave big tips. There are other, you know, jobs where that you're getting a bunch of money that isn't going to be taxed under the system. Neither one of those is right. So I know where you're going with this, and I agree. Let's just get rid of the system. Let's go to a system where income doesn't matter. Let's just go to a system that is more fair, the fair tax, and income doesn't matter. We don't have to worry about reporting.
You know, in the whole purpose, as far as I can see, for the current tax system is that it empowers the politician to manipulate the code in such a way as to manipulate our behavior.
Absolutely.
What kind of a jerk do you got to be to want to exercise that kind of power over this poor waitress?
I know. I agree. And that's what the whole system's all about. And if you get into some auditing procedures, there are some, I wish I had more time, but we're running out of time tonight. I'll talk some night about auditing procedures. In fact, what I want you to do is I want you to remember that, call me and ask me about it sometime, how they audit certain businesses.
It's like you're going to assign me homework.
No, all you have to do is write it down and remember to ask me sometime.
Okay. All right.
And we'll talk about it. But tonight we're all out of time. So I want to thank everybody for joining me. Be sure to tune in every night, midnight Eastern time. Also on the weekends, 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.